You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
11-year-old Deming Guo finds himself abandoned when his mother, Polly, an undocumented Chinese immigrant, doesn't come home from work to their Bronx apartment. He's adopted by two well-meaning white college professors and moves to their home upstate, where his name is changed to Daniel Wilkerson. In Lisa Coe's debut novel, The Leavers, Daniel struggles with his identity and never quite feels at home in his new life as he attempts to unravel the mystery of his mother's disappearance. Barbara Kingsolver chose The Leavers as the 2016 Penn Bellwether Prize for Fiction for a novel that addresses issues of social justice. It's published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, and I'm very pleased it has brought Lisa Coe to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Barbara Kingsolver told you that when she founded the Bellwether Prize, she hoped to find and support writers who had the courage to tackle exactly the kind of risky, sensitive, topical subjects that you've undertaken in The Leavers. Did you plan to take on such difficult issues, undocumented immigration, cultural assimilation, deportation, when you began writing the novel?
Well, I don't see them so much as difficult issues as just American issues, really. And I started writing the novel about 8 years ago. It was actually inspired by real-life stories.
This happens more than once?
It happens all the time, actually. It's been happening for many, many years. And the original inspiration came from a woman that was published in the New York Times who'd been a Chinese undocumented immigrant who'd been in an immigration detention center for over 2 years. And what really struck me about her story was that she'd had an 8-year-old son, and she tried to bring him into the U.S., and he had gotten caught by immigration authorities and adopted by an American family. So I was just really horrified by this.
But did people sometimes just get picked up and their kids not notified?
Absolutely.
Oh, my.
There's a way that the detention center and all these privatized for-profit kind of underground facilities function as above the law.
You've published a number of short stories over the years.
Have
you addressed similar issues in them?
Not so much. My short stories are a lot about growing up in New Jersey and also a lot about Chinese-American families as well.
You told NBC News that you set a goal in 2014 to get 50 rejections a year. What were you setting out to lose?
It was a way to sort of reframe the psychological way of submitting as an artist. Instead of being really disappointed every time I got rejected, I decided, why not just aim for rejection? That way I'll feel like I've won something.
So did you feel bad when you were given the Bellwether Prize?
Yeah, I was distraught. No, I was thrilled, but I definitely didn't expect it to happen.
So the novel begins with this 11-year-old, Deming Guo, and his mother, Polly, at their home in the Bronx. What kind of person is Polly?
Well, Polly, she's sort of a rebel. She grows up in a small town in China. She's an only child. Her mother dies at a very young age. And she, like many women around the world, grows up with a lot of expectations put upon her as a girl, and she decides that when she's young that she's going to be the first girl in her village to move to the nearest city to work in a factory. And then she later decides to pay 50 grand to get smuggled into the U.S. in a box, and she comes to New York, and she builds a whole new life for herself.
But she's very direct with Deming when she tells him that living in the Bronx and working at a nail salon was not my plan.
Yes.
She wants a different kind of life for her son, obviously.
Yeah, she wants big plans. I mean, she's come all this way, and she's dreaming big and working hard.
You mentioned that she was smuggled in to the country in a box for $50,000. Is that also based on a real story?
That is. That was based on a lot of research I did about undocumented immigration from China to New York. There are a lot of underground economies with regards to people who pay to get smuggled and take out exorbitant loans.
And we're talking a lot about this kind of thing now, but I'm assuming you had no idea that by that when the book was going to be published, deportation and immigration, et cetera, were going to be major topics. So has this been going on for a long time? Less noticed than it is now because of President Trump?
Yeah, I think so. And the interesting thing is that people are saying this is a timely story, but it's been timely for many, many years, dating back to the Bush and Obama administrations. During the Obama administration, there was actually a bed quota of 35,000 immigrants per day that had to be imprisoned in immigration detention on any given day. So now we're just seeing that being stepped up and more aggressively pursued.
And in an essay you wrote about the book, you ask, why did these mothers have to be deported while the children stayed behind? Why were wealthy white American parents deemed fit while immigrant parents who wanted to raise their own children were deemed unfit?
Yeah, it's something that really struck me when I was reading these stories, why these immigrant parents couldn't take their children with them, even if they wanted to, when they left the country, and what that said about how the U.S. views who is assimilable and who is a quote-unquote fit parent. There were cases in which mothers' parental rights were actually severed because they weren't fluent in English. And last time I checked, that's not a requirement to raise your own child.
Deming and Polly speak Fujianese. Why did you choose Fuzhou as Polly's hometown?
Well, it's actually the region where the largest amount of immigrants from China are coming, especially to New York these days.
Not from Canton?
No, that's sort of the first earlier wave of immigration. So a lot of the new Chinatown neighborhoods in Queens and Manhattan and Brooklyn are mostly Fujianese.
And where is Fujian?
It is the southeastern part of China.
So it's along the coast. Mm-hmm. It's just a different part of along the coast.
Yes,
is
exactly.
The food very different? Is the dialect very different?
It is. I'm definitely not fluent in Chinese. My parents are from the Philippines, but they're ethnically Chinese. And I did end up going back to Fuzhou to do some research and was completely illiterate and unable to communicate.
But you say in that essay that you were so worried about misrepresenting China that Polly's narrative was stalled before you did go to Fuzhou.
Yeah, the trip and visiting her hometown, the hometown that I modeled her character on, was a huge help. Gave me a lot of the textures to write about her scenes. But, you know, I kind of had to step back from that research after a while, too, and just let the characters do their thing.
Often books are over-researched.
Exactly.
And then the real sacrifice is cutting out little things that you just loved.
Yes. so many things cut out.
My guest is Lisa Koh, K-O, her novel, The Leavers. Do you think that China has been misrepresented in other novels and films?
Oh, I don't know if I can speak to that necessarily. I wouldn't see myself as a China expert. I just hope that I've done it justice and that I've done my characters justice and their stories justice.
We meet Deming again when he's a young adult named Daniel. He's a college dropout, a gambling addict, and not very happy. So all as a result of his mother's disappearance?
Yeah, it's a really early trauma for him because what happens is that his mom goes to work one day and she never comes home. He gets adopted by this new family and he's sort of exiled to this new community. And the whole time he never knows what happens to his mom.
But he's also given a new name. And in many instances when non-Chinese people adopt a Chinese kid, they'll keep at least his first name.
Right.
But he becomes Daniel Wilkerson.
Mm-hmm.
So they're well-meaning. Why would they change his name?
Well, I feel like they're sort of an example. Peter and Kay Wilkinson, Daniel's adoptive parents, of these kind of liberal parents who want to do the right thing. They want their kid to fit in. They want him to be part of their community and their family and make him feel like he belongs. But it's not really a definition of belonging that's right for him.
You write about a missionary attitude surrounding transracial adoption. Why do you say that choosing to adopt transracially can be a kind of liberal racism in itself?
Well, I'm definitely also not an authority on transracial adoption, but I did hear in a lot of these pieces I was reading about in the cases of the undocumented parents and their children being taken away, that there was sort of this idea that the adoptive parents felt like they had the right to this, to these child.
And they could give the kid a better life.
They could give the kid a better life. And that made me think, what did that mean to give a child a better life? Is it just economic privilege? Is it sort of their idea about who is a better parent and who can do a better job?
Well, they definitely can, as people who have more money,
right,
feed him better, get him, give him better
Absolutely.
Clothing.
Yeah. And but
you tell the story through different perspectives. Deming's perspective as a child, as an adult, Polly's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Important to not just do an omniscient narrator?
Well, I tried a different number of tactics. I wrote first person, third person, started mainly from Polly's point of view. But it felt like Deming's story really wanted to be there. And in the end, it made a lot of sense for their characters to sort of grapple with one another, for Deming to look for his mom, and that to be the main storyline of the book.
And that's what he does. And
that's
the mystery of the book.
Yes.
You write, internalized depression runs deep. When you're a girl from an immigrant family where financial anxiety is paramount and your grandparents had third grade educations, becoming a writer was not encouraged. So when did you know you wanted to be a writer, and how did you get past the lack of encouragement?
Oh, well, it took a lot of stubbornness and failure. I've been writing since I was 5 years old, writing stories, and it was always something that I just deeply loved in a way that I communicated. But I didn't see it as a viable career. I think many people don't, because it often isn't.
Although there's a great literary tradition in the Chinese community, although coming from a Philippine filter, does mm-hmm. that affect everything?
Sure. I mean, we don't necessarily identify as being from China, because my family is not from mainland China. So there's sort of that double layer of migration that runs throughout my family as well.
In a New York Times op-ed that was published last month, you wrote about so-called white food and what it meant to a first-generation kid. How was food your family's way of feeling included in the American middle class?
Well, in the piece in the Times, I wrote about how I grew up eating a lot of really crappy American junk food. Cheetos, frozen pizza, mac and cheese, and that was
all
something.
Your schoolmates were going to McDonald's?
Well, the interesting thing is that I grew up in a predominantly white town, and many of my schoolmates were eating carrot sticks and apples. And so it was almost as if, as this immigrant family, we were overcompensating with our ideas about what Americans ate.
And you write, I was encouraged to assimilate and also accused of it.
Right.
That's something that I witnessed when I lived in New York's Chinatown. Mm-hmm. Parents complained that their kids, the reason I mentioned McDonald's, all the kids want to eat at McDonald's.
Yeah, who doesn't?
At the same time, they wanted their kids to fit in, and they relied on their kids' assimilation to help them get through. Their
right.
kids often were the translators for mm-hmm. their parents.
Yeah. There's, I think, a lot to speak of about the complexities of assimilation. It's often a lot more violent than we give it credit for, where parents want their kids to assimilate, but at the same time fear that there's a sense of loss involved as well.
And you note that you were surprised when you learned as a child that your American friends didn't really eat Spam, even though Spam is an American invention.
It is. It was brought over from the American military to many countries during World War II and the Korean War. So it's sort of an export of America that was later brought back to America by many immigrants.
So is assimilation a more complicated process than most Americans would like to believe? Because often we hear people complain, well, they come here and they talk their own language and they wear different kinds of clothing.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of this fantasy of there being this joyful melting pot where immigrants just come over and sort of, you know, add their recipes to the dominant American narrative and everybody's happy. And, you know, I like to think about the questions about what does it really mean to be American? You know, who's assimilating into what and why? What does that mean?
Well, since everybody who came to this country after the initial pilgrims
mm-hmm.
was an immigrant on some level or another.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't the process always been thus? Is it just simply a matter of if you go back two generations, you no longer are aware of the pain of the assimilation process?
Sure, but there's also a lot of different dynamics in terms of what certain kinds of immigrants are able to fit in certain ways more smoothly, and what that says about race and ethnicity and power dynamics.
So is it back to short stories for you?
No, I'm working on a new novel.
I'm not going to ask you what it's about.
Yeah.
The Leavers is Lisa Coe's first novel. It won the Pen America Literary Award, and deservedly so. It's gotten fabulous reviews. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.